Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. The specter of presidential impeachment is dominating the national political debate as congressional Democrats continue to investigate President Donald Trump's outrageous and possibly illegal behavior in the Ukraine scandal. In recent weeks, a lengthening list of career diplomats and administration officials have come forward to voice deep concerns about Trump's actions. For North Carolinians trying to gauge the politics of impeachment, it's hard to find a more knowledgeable expert than veteran Meredith College political science professor David McLennan. McLennan recently sat down with News and Views producer Clayton Henkel for a special extended interview.
Well, David McLennan, welcome back to News and Views.
Good to be with you, Clayton.
We are months away from the 2020 elections, but those who follow politics are always interested in how our political leaders are doing, and Meredith College has been polling on that very issue. Before we talk about the individual candidates, let's talk about the I word, impeachment. Your poll found that a majority of the state's residents were very familiar or somewhat familiar with the allegations of wrongdoing stemming from President Trump and the situation in Ukraine.
That was kind of a surprise to me because on many issues, citizens are like everyone else. Some follow it closely and some don't. And yet their self-report indicated that this particular issue has caught their attention. One of my students reported that a caller said that this was the most interesting reality show on. So I thought that was an interesting comment that a North Carolinian made.
Talk a little bit about why you think people are familiar with it, but also very divided on how the Congress should move forward.
Well, I think, you know, it is a, you know, only the fourth or third, depending on which president you count, if you count Nixon there, time we've had an impeachment inquiry. So I think it is historic, and I think people notice that this is not just your usual Trump tweet or that sort of thing. It's more significant. But as with everything else, North Carolinians are divided pretty much along partisan lines. Although we had, you know, some Republicans support in the impeachment inquiry. But I think, and this kind of reveals a lot about polling these days, we happen to be polling as it was unfolding. And so even though 48% reported they would support the inquiry and 41% said they would not, we noticed that even later in the week that we did the calling, we started hearing more and more people support it. So it's a very difficult thing to poll during breaking kind of news situations.
Yeah, and certainly by 2020, the situation could be dramatically different.
It could be. And, you know, again, we may see articles of impeachment drawn up by the House this fall and maybe even a trial, but we may not. And I think, you know, again, the impact on the 2020 election will be profound.
You mentioned Nixon. I think a lot of our listeners may remember that. A lot of them probably just have a vague recollection of what happened then. How is it different now, particularly when you're thinking about news coverage and social media and how that changes what a person's perception may be?
Well, remember back, you're younger, so I'll say I remember back when the Nixon impeachment was going on. We had three networks plus PBS and then the major daily newspapers plus radio. And so everybody got sort of the same view of the Nixon proceedings. You know, now people are partisan not only in their beliefs about politics, but in terms of the media they follow and consume news from and social media. Depending on who you follow, you could get a very different perception of what's going on with the president's impeachment inquiry. If you follow the president, he's tweeting almost constantly about it and framing it in terms of this morning. He framed it in terms of being a lynching. But if you follow other people, you get a very different perception. So I think the media environment is definitely contributing to how people are viewing the president generally, but also the impeachment inquiry specifically.
Do you think the president is trying to shape it daily?
That is his number one concern right now. He recognizes, I think, that, you know, this is very serious. And as he said, he doesn't want an impeachment. I mean, to go down in history, even if you're not removed from office, which is the Senate's responsibility, being impeached by the House, you know, you're in a very select and not very favorable company there with Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton.
Well, there is no doubt that this is taking a toll on the president's approval rating. Talk a little bit about what the Meredith College poll found there.
We've been polling about the president's approval, as we do on the governor and many other political figures over time. And this is the first time we've seen a significant drop in the president's approval rating. You know, Democrats have always, since almost his inauguration, had low approval ratings for him. But he's always been consistently in the mid to upper 80s in terms of his approval rating among Republicans. And so now for the first time, he dropped slightly below 40% overall, but into the 70s in terms of his approval from Republicans. So my conclusion was that even though his approval ratings are high among Republicans, they've dropped significantly, and independents and Democrats have always been low.
And we should say that the economy, which continues to be strong, is probably helping with those approval numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. And we asked the question about how satisfied you are with both North Carolina and the United States. And Republicans, a majority of Republicans, are satisfied with both, which, again, is a question that really is impacted by the economy.
Well, Meredith College also polled on potential 2020 presidential matchups. And while the field is still relatively wide, if you've watched a recent debate, there's still a lot of folks on the stage. And there's clearly a list of top-tier challengers that North Carolinians could see putting up a strong challenge to the president.
Strong challenge, but the president has really an electoral floor. So despite his dropping approval ratings in the impeachment inquiry, he's still polling relatively well in North Carolina against the top five. We did the top five, including Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, and those folks. And so, you know, he has not, as national polls have suggested, he's not running behind in North Carolina. He's in the margin of error with a couple of people, which means basically statistically tied with Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden. The others are running a little bit behind the president.
The next Democratic presidential debate is in November. What are the top contenders or those who are perhaps on the bubble need to do to sort of raise their profile to have a breakout moment?
Well, and that's the real issue. I mean, as we saw in the most recent Democratic debate, when you have 12 people on stage for 3 hours, it's a marathon for people, both the candidates and the viewers, and it makes it very difficult. I think the sort of mid to lower tier candidates who qualify for the debate really have to not so much stake out their positions on issues, because I think we've been following that, but sort of stake out their position in terms of leadership. And that's what I think my poll results indicate, is the Democrats, even though people think it might be a good election year for Democrats, no one has stood out yet. You know, Biden has the name recognition. Elizabeth Warren kind of has the policy. Pete Buttigieg nationally has got some following. And Bernie Sanders has the Bernie Bros. But, you know, again, there's still a lot of room for Democrats, both at the top tier and I think the middle tier, to really differentiate themselves.
There's also a perception, or at least some of the candidates have said, we need to be careful here. We don't want to tear down one another and give the president a lot of ammunition heading into the general election.
That's always the danger for a crowded field, you know, against someone who's going to be the presumed nominee on the Republican side. You know, whether it be Medicare for all or some other policy issue, they do go back and forth. They have to differentiate themselves somehow. Going after Elizabeth Warren on her health care policy and what it's going to cost is a way to do it. But again, you saw the next day the president was out there tweeting about Democrats as socialists. You know, for middle America, that can be a very damaging label.
Another challenge in addition to connecting with the voters is keeping the money coming in. Are there some presidential hopefuls that we may see drop out simply if they don't have the money of, say, a Tom Steyer, who can stick around as long as a billionaire would want to stick around?
Yeah, and that's going to be the issue. I mean, Cory Booker had sort of a deadline for his contributions a couple of weeks ago. You know, and that indicates that, you know, again, it takes a lot of money to run a national campaign. Many of these candidates are spending time in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, the three of the first four states, and they've got staffs. And so it does become a question of, can you keep paying the kinds of costs that it takes to run a campaign? And I think we will start seeing people just drop out. But someone like Tom Steyer, who has deep pockets, even though his poll numbers have not indicated strong support, he can stay in longer than someone like a Cory Booker, who depends on campaign contributions.
Yeah. Have any of the would-be hopefuls surprised you at all?
Elizabeth Warren has surprised me because of some of the situations she's had herself in over the last couple of years, the back and forth with the president over her ethnic heritage. You know, I thought, I'm not sure but she has really been very strong on policy, and that's where she's carved out her niche. I mean, you may disagree with her policies and say that they're too liberal for most Americans, but she comes out with a new policy, it seems like, almost every day. On the flip side, Joe Biden was the presumed front runner and has had some lackluster performances in the debates. He does have strong performances on the campaign trail. Pete Buttigieg, who most North Carolinians probably couldn't have identified 3 or 4 months ago, you know, is doing relatively well in our poll, but also doing relatively well in like the Iowa poll, which, you know, frankly, since we do a state by state primary or caucus process, that's probably more important that he's doing well in Iowa than he is doing well in North Carolina at this point.
Very interesting. Well, let's talk about some of the other races that Meredith College polled on. Senator Tom Tillis, he'll be trying to hold on to his seat, and he's got a challenge from his own party before he even faces off against a Democrat in the general election. What do the numbers show there?
Well, we didn't poll against a primary opponent, but that's certainly worth considering because his opponent is self-financing his campaign. But in the general election, we matched up Tom Tillis against two prospective Democratic nominees, neither of which is that well known. Cal Cunningham has run statewide before, and Senator Erica Smith is from the northeastern part of the state, but not well known. And yet, despite their small name recognition, they're doing well against the incumbent Tom Tillis. It really points to the fact that Tom Tillis is not a well-loved person, even within his own party. And I think that's why you're seeing a very strong challenge, even for the nomination. He runs behind President Trump in terms of matchups, about 6 or 7 points, which is not good. I mean, someone that North Carolinians are fairly familiar with, I mean, he's been in the North Carolina House for a number of terms, was Speaker of the House before he moved to the U.S. Senate, and still is polling very weakly against some low name recognition Democrats.
And that's why sometimes somebody like a Cal Cunningham or a Erica Smith might jump into the race because they're like, well, I'm not that well known, I'm not that well financed, but stranger things have happened.
And, you know, they can look up to the top of the ticket, someone like a Roy Cooper, who we also polled a prospective matchup against Dan Forrest. And Roy Cooper is polling very well. In fact, he has been consistently the strongest polling politician in the state. He's had the highest approval numbers when we asked that. And also in the matchup against Dan Forrest, he's running pretty strong against Dan Forrest. So I think someone in the Senate race could say, well, you know, the presidential candidate or the governor might help me out in the general election.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the governor's race in a moment. I had one more question about the Senate race, and that is that Tom Tillis seems to be putting forth a strategy that is, I'm going to stick with President Trump, and I'm not going to make any waves after that one little op-ed that he had a year ago. But he's really sticking with him on issues like Ukraine. He's giving him the benefit of the doubt. Is that a good approach?
It's a risky approach. He recognizes that President Trump won the state in 2016 and is still running well among Republicans. So he's taking very much the same base strategy that the president is taking, that you stick with the president or you risk losing the Republican base. If he loses the Trump Republican base, then that makes it very, very difficult because he's not polling well among independents at all.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the gubernatorial race. Roy Cooper, as you mentioned, is doing well. I think Tom Jensen of Public Policy Polling, I know you know him, he has said, of course, that in some regards, Roy Cooper is every bit as popular a governor as Jim Hunt was in his day. And that's a pretty remarkable thing.
Yeah. And of course, Jim Hunt was the only four-term governor we ever had. And so his popularity was very strong over a long period of time. But Roy Cooper, I mean, to think about the situation that he faces, a lot of opposition within the General Assembly, obviously, and, you know, they're battling over the budget, Medicaid expansion, a number of issues where gone toe-to-toe with the Republican leadership, and yet he seems to be fairly popular. And Jim Hunt had a little bit more cooperation from the General Assembly for many of his years as governor. So it's even more remarkable that Roy Cooper maintains his popularity despite the fact that there are bumps in the road.
And while he is popular, we should expect a very strong challenge mounted by Dan Forrest.
And Dan Forrest, you know, is an experienced politician. He's been lieutenant governor for a while. He's got a strong fundraising base in the state, as well as just a strong base in the state among social conservatives. So I think it'll be a very expensive gubernatorial race that we'll see play out, and also one that could get pretty negative.
Well, because we are getting closer and closer to election season, it feels like neither party wants to give the other a win. And so you look at things like Medicaid expansion that seemed very probable in January. Now it feels like it's just going to become campaign fodder for the coming year.
Yeah, I mean, I think people have gone into campaign mode right now. And, you know, even though we're still over a year away from the general election, you're right that you don't want to be perceived as weak. And I think that's the strategy for not doing something with the governor on Medicaid expansion. And likewise, the governor holding the line in terms of Medicaid expansion and the budget. So, you know, I think it's difficult to see in whatever legislative session we have remaining this year and in the short session next year, much movement on the big issues. And the governor will campaign against the General Assembly. That'll be a campaign talking point for him. And Dan Forrest will probably pick up and say the governor is an obstructionist governor trying to spend us into oblivion.
Sounds like they could print their campaign materials right now. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other issues real quickly that you did poll on, because I thought these were interesting. Gun safety laws, that's something that you looked at. And we've had some mass shootings in the last few years, unfortunately, that have shaped people's opinions. So what did you find?
Well, first of all, a lot of North Carolinians own guns, which is no big surprise. I mean, North Carolina has been a strong Second Amendment state. But that doesn't mean that they don't support some gun legislation. So we polled on a couple of issues kind of a little bit different than other polling organizations who ask about background checks. So we polled on what are called red flag laws, which would give a judge the power to temporarily remove guns from someone determined to be unsafe. And we found that there was broad support for the red flag laws in North Carolina. Republicans, a majority of Republicans, as well as a majority of Democrats, supported that kind of legislation. However, when it comes to something like Beto O'Rourke talks about, which is a mandatory buyback program for assault weapons, the Democrats wanted that. Republicans were pretty strongly against it. So my conclusion was that North Carolinians favor modest and, I hate to use this expression, common sense kind of gun laws, but once gun safety laws kind of push beyond maybe background checks and red flag laws, they're a little bit concerned about those.
And Meredith College, of course, is a women's college, so it's always nice to hear what you're polling on with the Equal Rights Amendment. That was a question you put forth. And the folks who you polled, what did they have to say on that?
Well, it's interesting because a bill was filed this year to have North Carolina be the state that would ratify the 28th Amendment, the Equal Rights Amendment. We decided to put that in the poll. The large majority of North Carolinians, both Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, favor the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. That doesn't seem to have a whole lot of impact on our legislators because that bill has sort of been sitting in committee since March, and it's unlikely to move out of committee. You know, and particularly as we break out the numbers in the Meredith poll, younger generations of North Carolinians see it as almost, why not? I mean, their results are really high. Older North Carolinians, maybe because they remember the battles from the 70s and 80s, even though they support it, they're a little bit less supportive than the younger generations. But, you know, it's one of those kind of things. You poll on an issue like that, recognizing that you might get a great result for the equal rights supporters. It may not make a difference.
Like the gun safety laws, like Medicaid expansion, like redistricting reform, it may be something that doesn't happen until 2020 or after. So we'll see where that goes. Final question here. Talk about the role, if you would, about independent voters next year. I know that they're a greater number than there used to be a few years ago, and they're clearly going to sway a lot of these races.
Yeah. Well, I think as we look at voter registration totals in North Carolina, it's been about a 10-year trend of people registering as unaffiliated, what we commonly refer to as independent voters. You know, that's now larger. The number of unaffiliates is larger than the number of registered Republicans, and some suggest they'll be larger than Democrats. Now, my colleague at Catawba, Michael Bitzer, has done a lot of good study of the North Carolina electorate, and he said, well, that's kind of misleading. He thinks less than 10% of North Carolinians are truly independent, which means they can go either way. So within the unaffiliated or independent voters, they lean a certain way or the other. But there's no doubt that young people, the people I teach on a regular basis, most of them are registered independents because they just don't believe that the party system is working for them. You know, if they come out in large numbers in 2020 or beyond, they could have a significant impact on that election and the future elections. And they tend to lean more Democratic. So I think this is why you're seeing a lot of battle over voting laws in North Carolina, redistricting still being fought over, where polling locations are, those kind of things, because I think Republicans see that the demographics are kind of moving against them, and they're doing whatever they can do to hold on to power. And again, that sounds like a cynical view, but I think most people who study this from the kind of 40,000-foot view see, you know, Republicans have got to change in the long run to be more attractive to young voters and those people who are considering themselves independent.
Interesting. Well, it's going to be a fascinating year to watch. I would urge folks to go to meredith.edu, take a look at the poll results. We've been speaking with Meredith poll director and political scientist David McLennan. Thanks for being with us.
Clayton, it's always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.